Scott Burnside back for another edition of Two Man Advantage, the podcast. And actually today I have the charter member back with me, Pierre LeBrun. Did you get any sleep at all after, I know the game ended, you know, sort of, it was still evening time, but it felt like it lasted an entire day. Columbus and Tampa into the fifth overtime. Did you get some sleep? I found it hard to unwind after watching it.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. Honest to goodness. And I kept staying in touch with some NHL officials to find out what the heck are you guys going to do if this game keeps going on. And finally, you know, we got word after the fourth overtime that poor Boston and Carolina had to play at 11 a.m. on Wednesday. And it stinks for them. I mean, you think about having your game day preparation and then having to go back to your hotel and have an 11 a.m. game. That is just crazy. But that was fun. That was fun yesterday.
I know. Well, and now I'm so excited for our guest who knows very well the Columbus Blue Jackets from his time there as the team president. And there's so much going on with John Davidson and his New York Rangers. A ton of things have unfolded in the last week or so. But John, maybe we can just start with you. A, thanks for coming to hang out with Pierre and I. But I wonder, what did you watch all of that yesterday and maybe what it was like for you, given your connection to a team you were president of for almost 7 years.
Yeah, hi guys, great being on with you. It was a great time. Actually, I had a great time in St. Louis when I was there for 7 years, and it was fantastic in Columbus about the same amount of time. And I'm just glad that last night's game didn't start at 8 o'clock. Otherwise I would have had an issue. But yeah, I watched every minute of it. I really like the Columbus Blue Jackets Hockey Club. It's a team that's we've never tanked once when we played the rebuild card, trying to get better. The highest pick or best number pick we ever had was the Pierre-Luc Dubois pick,
and that didn't really work out though.
And yeah, I'll never forget when we made the pick in, I think it was Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
Pierre, and when we made the pick, the whole building just gasped. It's like the air went out, and everybody, you could just hear everybody mumbling and talking.
Yeah,
that was my remembrance of it, being up on the stage. But he's becoming a bull of a hockey player, and he's a good man, and he's worked his way, and it's worked out for Columbus. They have a team that, you know, last season they had more man games lost due to injury than anybody, yet were right in the race all year long because they know how to play the game. And there's some good talent there. There's some very good young talent. There's very, very good top four on the back end. The two goalies they had played pretty well all season. Corpy last night was outstanding. He was part of the minor league team in Cleveland that won the championship of the American League. He and Anton Forsberg were the two goalies. So to see Korpisalo play well like that, I'm happy for him. I've seen him work all the way through. And Manny Legacy, the goalie coach, has done a terrific job with the goaltenders there.
Well, JD, you mentioned that draft with Pierre-Luc Dubois. I think what I remember is GM Jarmo Kekalainen just getting it from the Finnish media after not taking Jesse Puljujärvi. But I think Jarmo can live with that moment now. But you have your own draft coming here with the New York Rangers. A lot of excitement after winning phase two of the lottery on Monday. What was that like to sit through that? And let's face it, there's not much you can do other than stare at the screen and cross your fingers. But what was that like for you?
Yeah, I used a little bit of superstition. We were in the office most of the day, and we had the police shield from Officer Stephen McDonald, who had been shot years ago and ended up passing away not too long ago. Big, big, big giant Rangers fan. And Jeff Gorton used it last year as a good luck piece, and the team moved up and picked number two. And then this year it sat on my desk all day long. And then I went home and Jeff Gorton took it into the conference room where he did the Zoom for the call to see who was going to get the prize. And sure enough, it worked again. Now at home, I had went to my good luck chair. I sat there. And then when it came on, when the ball started going up and down, I looked away. I couldn't look. I just couldn't look. And then all of a sudden, my wife, who was sitting there, started to scream. And I went, holy, you can't be serious. And boom, there it was, New York Rangers. And, you know, it's I'm not speechless very often, as you know, but I was speechless. I didn't know what to say, and it was an emotional thing. I think it's good for us. It's good for hockey in New York. It's good for hockey. If we do this right and build the team the way we want to, he's going to be our number one pick will be a big part of this thing.
Well, John, it just strikes me that if you think back to the last week or 10 days, or even from the moment the Rangers arrived in the bubble, and obviously a disappointing play-in series against Carolina, you lose three straight. And I wonder what that transition is like from, trying to unpack what happened in that series to all of a sudden. You're right. You're talking about a potential generational talent in a guy like Alexis Lafreniere, and maybe how do you sort of unpack all that happens in the space of a week or 10
Yeah,
days?
that was it was remarkable. The best way to look at it is, you tell me what's normal anywhere right now. There just isn't.
Right.
The whole world's not normal. Nothing's normal, period. So when we went up there, as I said to our group and also to members of the media here in New York, I didn't know what to expect. I just didn't know because it was just, it's different. I credit the league and the work that they did to put this thing together. I mean, the massive work that they've done, I can speak on behalf of the Toronto bubble. It was outstanding. And then for us to not play well, when I look at it, what I tried to do was take the positives out of it. We had some young people like Brett Howden and Kaapo. The young guys played very, very well for us. The veteran players, the better players, didn't have a great three games. I also know that when we had our camp, Keandre Miller, who's a big, strapping defenseman who played at Wisconsin, he came here to that camp, and we knew that he couldn't play in the tournament. But he was here at camp and he was outstanding. And that really was something that was good for him and good for us to know. So we picked that up as a positive. We also know that going into game one, we had Lemieux suspended, who was a good third line player. He played very well in game three when he got back. We had D'Angelo playing with a hamstring injury before the tournament. We had Shesterkin sitting out the first two games, our goalie, because of a groin injury. And there was one other one I can't remember right now, but there was four guys out of your. Jesper Fast, we call him Quickie. He was injured in the first couple of minutes of game one, so it was like, man, we got hit right over the head here. But then when you get home, we went right into the office the next day and had a multitude of meetings and discussions, and I call them BS sessions, sitting in the conference room going over everything, and we decided that that was the first day of the next season. And let's pick positives out of this thing because we expect the really good players to play well for us, like they had been playing. So we took positives out of it, even though it was a very different experience. And then you sit and wait for the lottery, the number one pick. And I don't know. I have people upstairs that I know pretty well, and my mom and dad and others had to be smiling on us because for us to win that, it's pretty interesting.
Well, and I have to say, GD, I'm not a huge fan of the way the lottery was played out in two parts. And I think had the ping pong ball gone to a couple other teams in that group, it would have been a lot of backlash. But I do think the Rangers winning it is in the spirit of the draft, in the sense that you guys are still in a rebuild. You're a young team. You're 11th in the East. You would not have made the playoffs had the pandemic not hit. And so I think from that perspective, those stars did align. And I know that you don't care about any of that, but it's not like, the big market Rangers get rich again. I mean, you guys went into a full rebuild and now you get a really important piece here.
And we tried to do the rebuild the right way. And I will say, sometimes when I was in St. Louis or I was in Columbus, I'd sit there and go, geez, maybe we should have tanked. Maybe we should have gotten the number one or two pick instead of the best in 7 years in St. Louis was four. And again, it was Pietrangelo during my time there. And Alex became a great player, just a great player. And thankfully for them, they went on and won a cup, which was very deserving. That city's a great sports city, great tradition. There's got to be 60, at least 60 alumni that live in St. Louis, just love the city. And they're loved back by the people there. It's pretty interesting. And then in Columbus, it's they've had a frustrating time with the franchise there, but it's very stable now. It's great ownership, very, very intelligent ownership who have decent patience and would trust you going through the build that you had to go through. And then people thought I probably was half nuts bringing Jarmo Kekäläinen in to be the general manager and knowing he came over from Finland. But when you analyze the whole thing, he's a guy that had lived over here for almost two decades, scouting, living in the Detroit area so he could scout all over the place. When he didn't get the job in St. Louis, he had worked for us in St. Louis. When he didn't get the GM job there, and Doug Armstrong did, he decided to move back to Finland, and he ran the Jokerit team, and he learned everything. He even learned more than just scouting. He learned about business and with the organizations, all this stuff. And so he was very, very ready when we brought him into Columbus. And for me and the staff they've put together, he's done a great job for that group. So I'm very proud of how things have gone in both St. Louis and Columbus. And now with the group we have here, we have Jeff Gorton, the GM, and we have Chris Drury, the assistant general manager. And boy, they work. And we've got some good things going, and we had some lady luck on our side. So this is going to be very interesting.
Well, I think, you know, John, that one of the things when you look at something like this happening and you have the first overall pick, do you and Jeff and Chris and the management team have to take care not to, you know, sort of get out of your planning lane, that you don't try and accelerate things, that you don't try and say, let's take a bigger bite next year. I mean, you already had the experience of a playoff round against Carolina that maybe you wouldn't have had, and the experience for those young players. But do you have to take a step back and say, wait a minute, let's not go crazy? Or how do you approach something like
there's
that?
There's the old saying, and it's a cliche, that you have to learn to walk before you learn how to run. And when you learn how to walk, you fall down sometimes. Just doing it a couple of times with my resume, I know how frustrating people get all around you when things seem to be tedious at times, but you've got to keep your sense. I remember holding season ticket town halls in St. Louis, and the fans, great fans, asking, boy, can you trade away a second rounder and get somebody in here just to help us a little bit? And I'm saying, well, you know, if the right deal came along, we'd sure look at it, but the reality is you can't just do that if you want to build a team that's going to be good for a long time. And it takes piece by piece by piece to be able to do that. It takes some patience. I remember the year in Columbus when we started the season on a bad note. I think it was 0-8 or something. And that's when we brought John Tortorella in, and Richie was let go, and he's now a coach in Tampa with their club. Todd Richards, and just a wonderful guy too. But our ownership basically said, listen, stay with it. Be smart, be prudent, do things right. Torts came in, and he really is a good coach. He helped change the culture there for sure. And the patience level paid off. It paid off in St. Louis. It's paid off in Columbus. And that's the only way you can do it. I think you'll see something like that in a very strong way with Steve Yzerman in Detroit. He's got a game plan, and he's very, very solidly sticking to it. We have to do the same thing.
Well, he wishes he had your pick, I bet, but that's another story. It's funny, after you guys won the lottery, JD, there were Rangers fans I noticed on social media that immediately pondered the possibility of moving down the two, because they feel you need a center more than a winger. I'll let you tackle that if you want, the possibility of that.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot of general managers in the New York area that wear Ranger jerseys. It's interesting, all this stuff. When you sit there and you you're going to get the number one pick, it opens up a whole lot of different thoughts and ideas. And you know, I think most teams, when they get the number one pick, it's generally a player that's a very, very good player, and so you don't mess with it at all. But it opens up the avenue to do other things throughout your organization. So it's something that we always will look at and analyze and try to figure out. We have another pick in the first round. I remember the Patrick Kane draft, Dale Talon with Chicago took Patrick number one. And there was a number of offers, including one from us that was pretty darn good, but there's no chance that he was going to change. And when you look back at it, Dale was very, very smart in doing exactly what he did. And he took the number one pick, and Patrick Kane, as you know, is a future Hall of Famer for sure. So it's always interesting. It opens up options all throughout your lineup. So we'll see where it all goes.
Yeah, John, we'll let you go in a moment or two. But obviously, one of the questions that you guys as an organization have to be wrestling with and dealing with is what's going to happen with your goaltending. I know from some of your comments to the New York media that you had a conversation with Henrik Lundqvist after you returned from the Toronto bubble. And I wonder what, you know, especially as a longtime NHL goaltender and a longtime executive, just what the dynamics are like when you try and sort through the business end of things and how to make this Ranger team the best it can be moving forward.
Yeah.
And paying the respect that a guy like Henrik Lundqvist, who is in my mind as well a future Hall of Famer, that he so richly deserves. What's that? Yeah. What's that balancing act like?
It's reality in life. You have to deal with it. There's no question. Sometimes when you're dealing with business as is, it's not a lot of fun, but you try to do things with respect to every avenue of the business. And these people are human beings. All of us are. As a player, I was a goalie, but I retired at 27 because my knees and back were shot. And I had to move on and got very lucky in television and other things. So it's been a good life for me. I think with Hank's situation, the two of us sat down. We had a great chat. It was a personal chat, which I'll keep in-house. But we're going to take our time, and so is he, and figure out what avenue is the best for both parties going down. We have three goalies here, including Hank, Georgiev, and Shesterkin. We know we can't carry three next year. It's just not a healthy situation. So we have to make some decisions, and we have to make decisions that are proper for the people involved. Henrik Lundqvist is one classy individual. This is a guy that's had one wonderful career, but we have to figure out what avenue both sides need to take to do what's best for everybody involved. That sounds rather generic, but it's truthful. So we're not there anywhere near yet. Don Meehan is the agent for Hank, and he's a good man. So we're all going to get together and figure this thing out.
Yeah. Well, it's you could hardly find a more professional and classy individual than Henrik Lundqvist, there's no way to understate how important he's been to that franchise. And I'm sure it will be fascinating to see how you work through it. But I'm not gonna freeze Pierre out, but I'm going to bring this interview to a close though, because I wanted to ask you something. I was talking to Pierre about this, and he was telling me that his first year as an analyst on Hockey Night in Canada and the Hot Stove, one of the great hockey panel shows of all time. I sound like Eddie Haskell. Was your last year, and so I wonder when you had that year where you were working alongside Pierre. Do you ever think, I wonder what will become of Pierre LeBrun? Did you see anything in him that year that indicated he might actually have a future? So, come on, no, I want to know.
He could BS the wheels off a Greyhound. So, I knew there was something good there.
I like to say to people, I was so bad on my first year on Hot Stove that JD had to quit.
I remember my very first interview I ever did. I did with Bill Torrey, the late Bill Torrey. What a wonderful guy. And he was sitting there, and we had one microphone. I was holding it, and I was interviewing him, and I put the mic in front of his face for the answer, and I think I chipped his teeth. I was so nervous. My hand was shaking so bad, I almost had to use my other hand to grab the right hand to stop the mic from shaking. And Bill was a champ. He hung in there with me, and then after, we laughed our tails off. The one thing about Scotty, about Pierre, is, and it's the same in any part of the world of business, if you work, you give yourself a chance. And Pierre, like yourself and others, work, make the calls, get the information, and then you get yourself a standard that's very high. And then people start believing in what you're doing. And then you have to have fun with it, too. We have to have fun. I used to have fun with Red Fisher.
Oh, yeah.
He used to rip me, and I'd rip him back. We had a We had a lot of fun. That was something I looked forward to every Saturday. That was a great.
Well, that was a wonderful year that we overlapped, JD. And I used to be so nervous phoning you and asking you what you want to talk about. I was like, you know, this guy's probably thinking, why is this kid bothering me right now?
But no, God,
it was good.
No, we're all.
It's a long time ago now.
It was a blast. Yeah, it's true. But it's still, you know, it just tells you the world of hockey has a big, huge umbrella that we're all under, whether you're writers or broadcasters or players or trainers or coaches or whatever. And there's so many good people that it's just, it's been such a wonderful life. It really has.
Good stuff. Well, John, that's a perfect segue. It's a perfect way for us to thank you for joining us and wish you all the best. It's going to be a crazy rest of the off season and into next year, but thank you for coming to hanging out with Pierre and I. It's been a real treat.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, guys. Stay safe, everybody. Stay safe, do your part, and we'll get through this thing.
Sounds good. Thanks, JD.
Okay, thank you.
Now, I know, Pierre, you'll be angry that they brought up your rookie season on Hockey Night, but I thought John handled that very well. But it was great to catch up with him. We're going to go to a break. And I'll ask you how what you think of what's going to happen moving forward with that Ranger team. So don't go away, because we'll be right back. Support for Two Man Advantage is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. And big news, Manscaped just launched in Canada. For those listeners in Canada, you can be one of the first Canadians to experience their life-changing products. That's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team perfected the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created, and have their new and improved lawnmower 3.0. So, get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code THEATHLETIC20. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, a $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. So go to manscaped.com today and use code THEATHLETIC20. You know what? I'm so glad that John was able to join us, Pierre, because he's not afraid to talk about, you know, his experiences in St. Louis or Columbus or different players. And he has such an incredible knowledge of the game that it's always a treat to catch up with him. And I that's a pretty incredible 2-week span for that New York Ranger team to go from being swept by the Canes to getting the number one pick. How close are they, do you think? Are they, you know, how close with Alexis Lafreniere do you think this team is to being, you know, a perennial contender?
Well, first of all, let me mention that I gave, you know, JD every opportunity alive to slam door the mere idea of trading the first pick, and he did not. Now, I think that's just wisdom there that, you know, he kind of hinted, I think, at the idea that, you know, Chicago never traded the pick, the first overall pick, when they took Patrick Kane. I think his hint there is, come and knock our socks off, but the likelihood is we would never do that. But you never want to close any avenue. You never know. A team might lose its mind, right? So I think that's really what the answer was there. I think there are still holes in that lineup. I love the direction they're going in, but I think that those holes were really exposed against Carolina. But that's okay. They are in a rebuild. Getting this kind of piece, and Alexis Lafreniere, yeah, he's a winger, not a center. But boy, oh boy, the kind of firepower they already have up front with Zibanejad and Panarin. I mean, that's, boy, they got, they're not going to have trouble scoring goals, but you ask the pertinent question, and it's how are they going to untangle the three goalie conundrum? And you know, I don't know that JD tipped his hand to us, but it seems hard to believe that Lundqvist will be back, right? Don't you think? I mean, I want to be careful not to read too much in between the lines of John Davidson's answer there, but I feel like when you have that kind of very personal meeting that he was talking about, that's probably the path that this is all headed here.
Well, and I mean, the reality is, and I want to to circle back to this with you as we get to into the latter stages of this podcast, but there are a lot of teams that are going to have some very, very difficult decisions to sort through in terms of their roster and their
frozen cap.
Because we know the salary. Yep, the frozen cap. And Henrik Lundqvist is under contract for $8.5 million in the 2021 season. That's his final, the final year of his contract. And I don't see any way from a cap end of things that you can have a goaltender who's going to play maybe a third of your games making $8.5 million in a frozen cap world, especially when you've got you know, other issues. You've got a bunch of RFAs, D'Angelo on the back end. He's got players. Jeff Gorton, the GM in that organization, they have a lot of decisions to make, and I don't know that you can have an $8.5 million goaltender who is your backup, and that's where Henrik Lundqvist is now. And I think the question is, if that's the case, if there is a buyout, you know, is there another place for Henrik Lundqvist in the NHL, or do we see him transition more or less seamlessly into some sort of role with that organization? It's so hard to imagine him anywhere else, but we did see Marty Brodeur go briefly to St. Louis and be, you know, before circling back in an executive role in New Jersey. Yeah. So I don't know.
I mean, listen, Henrik Lundqvist holds a lot of the cards with his clauses you know, very powerful agent that, interestingly, John Davidson took the point of mentioning in Don Meehan. So I think the Rangers want to play this carefully and do the right thing here. Again, because of the respect they have for this franchise player, but also because they know they have to make sure that this is all played out the right way. So here's what I would say. I think if I'm Don Meehan and Henrik Lundqvist, I sit back and see what happens in the playoffs here. Because the playoffs have a way of changing the path of many organizations, right? And so I'll just give you an example. Again, this is not a rumor. This is not anything. This is not real God. This is nothing. This is just me making an example. What if Colorado were knocked out in the first round of the playoffs? I don't see it happening myself, but let's say it happened. And that a lot of it is, whoa, boy, is Grubauer the guy or not? I'm just saying, like, for 1 year, do the Avs take a stab at Henrik Lundqvist? Or do they go elsewhere? Now, I think the reality is, I actually think Philip Grubauer is the real deal. And I think he's going to be a very good goalie for them for many years. But I'm just giving an example of, if you're Henrik Lundqvist right now and Don Meehan, why make any decision right now? Let's let the playoffs, you know, play themselves out and see if there are any options that would interest him. And if not, then maybe there's another decision to make there.
Yeah. That's a good point. All right, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, you and I are going to talk some changes in Florida. I'm going to ask you about what you think the trade market will look like this off season as we move along. I'm going to ask you about how you feel about what we're seeing as we just edge our way into the first round. But first, this message from Indochino. Pierre, you raise a great point about, you know, what you do if you're the Rangers and you're Henrik Lundqvist, and how the landscape may change pretty dramatically between now and early October, when we, you know, again, fingers crossed, we hope to see a Stanley Cup champion crowned in the bubble city of Edmonton. But the landscape continues to shift almost daily now as teams are eliminated from the play-in round. Now we've gone from 24 to 8 teams in the that were involved in the competition in Edmonton and Toronto. And it didn't take long, as it was first reported that was going to happen, and it did, that Dale Tallon and the Florida Panthers parting ways, Dale's contract not being renewed and the Panthers moving on. Are we going to see, do you think, you know, is this the kind of thing we're going to see now as we move along through this process, and we do see it during a normal playoff year, and this is anything but normal, but this is maybe the normal course of business as teams take stock from what happens when they're eliminated and really try and plot a path for the future. And maybe, you know, definitely no question that Panther team still not nearly competitive given the talent that they have.
No, and at the end of the day, and you know, Dale Tallon has a keen eye for talent, showed that in his time in Chicago as well. But at the end of the day, he had 10 years in Florida and they only made the playoffs twice. And some of that is on him. Some of that is some of the wacky things that happened you know, with the franchise, there's all kinds of reasons. But at the end of the day, that was a pretty healthy crack at it. And the team really needed to break through this year, especially after the offseason in which they splurge on Joel Quenneville. They splurge on Sergei Bobrovsky. I don't know that anyone will feel that that Dale Talon didn't get a fair shake. It'd be interesting now to see who they hired. As I reported via Twitter on Tuesday, the Montreal Canadiens have given the Florida Panthers permission to speak with assistant GM Scott Mellenby. And of course, Scott Mellenby holding a special place in the hearts of Panthers fans, right? From the original Panthers team. And I believe he scored the first goal in franchise history, actually, if I'm right or wrong on that. But the whole, you know, rat thing and all that lore. So, you know, he'd be an interesting candidate and a guy that might be ready. Scott, you know, Scott Mellenby went through the GM interview process with Vegas, with Edmonton, and with Minnesota most recently. Obviously didn't get any of those jobs, but, you know, my experience is that those guys tend to have to go through the interview process a number of times before they finally get the gig, right? I mean, you look at how many times Bill Guerin went through the process before he got it in Minnesota. You know, similar for Tom Fitzgerald before he got it in New Jersey. So I feel like Scott Mellenby could be on that track. But having said that, I think that Panthers president Matt Caldwell is planning on interviewing a number of different candidates. I know I heard from one source the other day, and I haven't been able to confirm this, so take it with a grain of salt at this point, but it would make sense. I heard that there might be interest in talking to Ron Hextall as well, and why not? Because as much as Chuck Fletcher has had unbelievable touches since the day he got to Philly, and when you look at that Flyers team, obviously there's a lot of pieces there that are from Ron Hextall's time there. And so I think Ron Hextall's stock continues to rise with the rise of the Flyers.
Yeah, I'm curious what you think of, because the reaction to being eliminated from the play-in rounds has been, it's been sort of widely varied. I'm curious to see how the Leafs respond. I think Kyle Dubas, the GM, is going to do a media thing. It might be happening now as we're taping this, but we heard from Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh.
He was not happy.
A GM who's... I was going to say he did not pull any punches about, you know, the desire to change. And that, like, honestly, of all the play-in rounds, that's the one I still can't really get my head around. And not that Montreal beat Pittsburgh in four games. And that's pretty shocking. But to me, the manner in which the Penguins went down for the second straight year, you know, after being swept by the Islanders in a really, you know, just a grisly performance for them a year ago. I thought that they had really turned a corner in terms of their identity and the way they approach things under Mike Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And man, there was so little urgency even when their backs were against the wall. But Jim Rutherford made it very clear that he expects there are changes that need to be made. In Edmonton, I got the sense that, you know, yes, they were disappointed at losing to Chicago, another, you know, fifth seed losing to a 12th seed. But my sense from Kenny Holland from afar was that, you know, that Oilers team is still in its formative stages. They still got things they need to work on, but maybe not as dramatic. I wonder how you unpack how some of the favorites who were dismissed from the play-in round are at least taking these first steps of, you know, unpacking what happened to them in not, you know, in being ousted from the competition.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is disappointing in Edmonton, but Kenny Holland's, you know, a guy who's been around and knows not to overreact. Having said that, I think the Oilers need to fix their goaltending. I mean, I think that has to be priority number one for Ken Holland, if at all possible, in this wacky offseason that we're going to have in the fall, is to see what his options are there. In my opinion, there's still a top-heavy team, obviously the best player in the world, and then the guy who's going to win the Hart Trophy. But then, you know, it thins out, and so they have to continue to work on their depth there, and some of that will come from within, from the way they've built up the organization the last few years. But again, if there's opportunities to add depth there, that's important too. But it's a much bigger deal in Pittsburgh to have lost. And Jim Rutherford never holds back. I respect him so much for his candor in those moments. And so there will be changes in Pittsburgh. But, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing. Like, I feel like, in a way, the Penguins made it a self-fulfilling prophecy. As you know, Scotty, the Penguins were not enamored internally when they found out through the rumor mill that the possibility was in a format that they would play Montreal in a best of five. And I remember thinking, man, you were 15 points ahead of them. Why are you so worried? Well, we know why, because they were worried about number 31. And boy, did that come out to play.
Yeah.
You know.
So so here's, you talk about changes, and literally as you and I were having this chat, and maybe you haven't looked, but I was just looking, the Penguins actually have just announced, so we're sort of, you know, we're right on top of this. They've announced that they will make dramatic changes to their coaching staff, and it looks like Mike Sullivan will return, but they will not renew the contracts of Sergei Gonchar, Jacques Martin, and Mark Recchi. So, you know, yeah, the first foot, or the first shoe, rather, really to fall, and really following on the heels of what Jim Rutherford was talking about having to make change. And you're right. I mean, this is, you know, it's that's a team that is in it to win it every year, and you have to be when you have that core, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, and even Sidney Crosby sort of mentioned, I think he was asked, you know, is the window closing on this team? And you know, I think, you know, Sidney was, you know, he's quite honest all, you know, when talking about, well, time, you know, time does pass, right? And so let me ask you, like, how urgent is it now in Pittsburgh when you have those sort of aging superstars? I mean, aging is a relative thing, but, you know, you have a core of superstars that have won three Stanley Cups, but there has to be urgency to take advantage of those players while they're still elite players in your organization.
Yeah, listen, they've already done an amazing job. Man, we've talked about this so often over the past few years. They've already done an amazing job. Like, I think people forget when Jim Rutherford was hired that I think a lot of people looked at the Penguins then and said, you know, you guys need to blow this up and retool it around 87 and 71. But they didn't. They did retool it, but it was not so much a retool as much as making the necessary changes to remain competitive. And boy, what a job by Jim Rutherford during that time. But I talked to another team about this actually this morning, and eventually you do run out of time. You run out of bullpen arms. like you can't. The salary cap system and the rules, it's just not meant to be that you can do this forever. And so I don't know. I think it's going to be harder this time to do the old 2.0, 3.0. You know, Crosby and Malkin remain amazing players, but, you know, getting up there in age. I think Crosby, with his, you know, the way that he handles himself and takes care of himself, I think he's going to play till he's 40 if he wants to. But I'm just saying it does make it harder to predict health and consistency and all those things when your core is aging. I thought Chris Letang was pretty ordinary in that series against Montreal, I must say. Not much you can do there unless he wanted out because he's got the full no move. They got a big decision in goal to make. Jim Rutherford said probably can't keep both, right? Jerry or Matt Murray has to make up a mind there, and that's not an obvious decision, quite frankly. You're picking between the guy who's won two cups and the guy who had the better year. So it is fascinating to me. And you know, as I tweeted on Tuesday, Scotty, and we might date ourselves here by the time people listen to this, but my understanding is that Jim Rutherford was leaning towards keeping his first-round pick, by the way. And this is not a small story. The Penguins are at number 15 overall. They traded the rights to a first-round pick either this year or next to Minnesota, of course, in the Jason Zucker trade. It looks like they're, as of Tuesday, they were leaning towards keeping it and therefore giving Minnesota the 21 first-round pick, but that would be unprotected. And so what I understood Tuesday was that Jim Rutherford was going to speak with his director of amateur scouting to get a good feel for this situation before he made a final decision. So maybe the Penguins will pivot and actually decide to do the opposite, but as of Tuesday night, they were leaning towards keeping the pick. And that's interesting because I don't know that there's an obvious answer. So in other words, I don't know that you, whatever the answer is, I don't think you can sit there and say, well, that's a terrible decision. I don't think you know. Except that if the Penguins don't bounce back next year and actually regress more, is there a danger of having given away a lottery pick? So I don't know. I mean, that's kind of an under-the-radar one that bears monitoring there.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because we've seen sort of in real time, we've seen, you alluded to it, right? I mean, time runs out for all these teams in the cap era. It ran out on the LA Kings, and now they've, you know, in some ways have bottomed out. Now are they ready to rise? I'm not sure. Is the bottom still there? But the Chicago Blackhawks are a fascinating story for me, and you wrote about it. I just thought it was so interesting. You talked to Stan Bowman because, you know, both he and Mark Bergevin, the GM of the two 12th seed teams that pulled off the upsets in the first round, you know, they've been under intense pressure in their respective markets. There have been some questionable decisions, no question about it. But that Chicago team, they have three or four players who are just terrific young assets. Some of them, I think of Kirby Dach, for instance, who really seemed to make terrific use of that 4.5 month pause in coming back. I thought he was excellent against Edmonton. Kubalik, you go down that list of terrific young players to bring Cat. And yet, so here's Chicago. I don't think they'll beat Vegas, but it's almost like they have had like a mini renaissance, like in the middle of their rebuild, still with Jonathan Toews, who was so good in that series against Edmonton, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith. You know, I don't think Pittsburgh has those. They haven't sunk, so they don't have those young players coming. So, and maybe that's right. Just the inevitable track that they need to sink further. So,
I was happy to write that piece because, first of all, let's be honest. When John McDonough was fired as Blackhawks president in late April, there were people around the league wondering what it meant for Stan Bowman. Because had there not been a pandemic and not been a pause, it would have been another year out of the playoffs as Stan Bowman continued to retool this roster and make it much younger. But it's clear, not only from my conversation with Stan Bowman, but also our colleague Scott Powers, who covers the Blackhawks, and his interview with interim president Danny Wirtz, that Danny Wirtz and Stan Bowman have kind of hit it off, which is important. And I think that they share a vision for where this is headed for this team. And so I think that is probably going to bring some stability to Stan Bowman's position with the Blackhawks there. And I think it's deserved, frankly. They're the youngest team in the 24-team tournament, and they made the playoffs now. They're going to lose to Vegas. I don't think there's any debate on that. But the experience that young roster is getting by having upset Edmonton and getting to play a team that could win the Cup in Vegas now is unbelievable mileage for all those young players on the Blackhawks. It's nothing but it. You know, it's like Montreal in a way, although the Hawks are much younger, is that, as someone else said to me from another organization when I was asking about what all this means for Montreal and Chicago, when you go into your off-season meetings, the way those meetings would have sounded without the pause, without the return to play, you would have been asking, is this going the right way if you're Mark Bergeron or Stan Bowman? You know, because you would have missed the playoffs and people are on you. And now you got invited to a tournament that you didn't deserve to get invited to, but you pull off the upset. And now your kids, you know, in Munchal's case, you know, Suzuki and Kakaniemi, are getting all this experience. Your outlook for your program and your path for this team completely changed because of something as arbitrary as the league decided to go to 24 teams. But they took advantage of it. Credit the Hawks and the Habs for saying, we're not just going to show up because we got dragged into a fight we weren't supposed to be at. We're going to do something with it. And I think it's a wonderful story.
I'm with you, and I'm sorry, I got zero sympathy for Edmonton, zero sympathy for Pittsburgh. Florida should have been much better. I'm with you. I'd say kudos to the teams that came, and I don't, you know, Arizona's in the same boat, probably, definitely, wasn't as big an underdog situation against Nashville, but, you know, and those teams that couldn't get the job done, you know, it is time for soul searching. And we've already seen in Pittsburgh now changes there. We've seen changes in Florida. I expect there'll be changes in Nashville. And you're right, it'll be fascinating to see whether teams like Arizona, Montreal, Chicago, whether they can build on this. And so next year, and if we can get the full 82 games in, you know, do they suddenly, you know, are they at a completely different place than we thought they would be?
Well, so this is this is, before we go, this is the funny thing about the 5 month layoff, right? Let's say there is no pandemic, and boy, wouldn't that be nice? Let's say everything had played out normally, and the Hawks and the Habs, you know, miss out. They come back again with their younger and younger rosters. You know, the Habs are going to bring in, you know, Romanov next year. If you and I were doing a podcast next November in a normal year and the season was 1 month in and the Habs and the Hawks were among the early season surprises as their programs continued, you wouldn't have been shocked, right? It would have been a talking point, but you wouldn't.
For sure.
The point is, how much of this return to play is half picking up where we left off, but half some teams taking advantage of the way things would have looked next year for them? That's what's fascinating to me about a 5 month layoff. Are we still into this season? We are, technically, I know. But in the actual arc of a lot of programs, are we still into this season or are we half into next year? And that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think the whole, you know, what happens between now and October and the award, you know, the Stanley Cup final is going to be fascinating. I mean, we've already seen epic five overtime, you know, game to start the first round. So who knows what happens on the ice. But you're right that the accelerated process, the calendar being compressed and all those kinds of things, it's going to change how teams approach things and how the game's going to look to us. I'm with you, of course. You wish that we were, you know, you wish we were in our off season now, but it's not the way it's happened. And so now it's going to be fascinating to see what the new reality is going to be even beyond this summer. So, all right, before we go, I want to ask you, what is there a series that you're like, oh, you know, maybe I can't wait to see this, or this series is going to tell me a lot about somebody or a team? What are you looking forward to in this first round?
I think Boston Carolina is the series that fascinates me the most, next to Columbus Tampa. And I didn't want to go to Columbus Tampa because we just had this amazing five overtime game. But of course, the whole revenge thing with Tampa and the fact that the Lightning, no matter what they say publicly, really did alter their lineup to some degree because of what happened against Columbus last year, right? We talked about this, from Maroon to Coleman to Goudreau to Bogosian. They got heftier. They got grittier to surround their all-world offensive talent. And it's funny because I wonder if Kyle Dubas in Toronto sits back and depending on Tampa's success in these playoffs, is there a path there for Kyle Dubas with his Leafs to look at what Julian Breezeboy did in the last, you know, 14 months? So that series is compelling for obvious reasons. But Boston Carolina, I think, is going to be dynamic. And I can't tell. I mean, Brad Marchand referring to the round robin as preseason games. You know, I can't tell if the Bruins are just going to, you know, flip the light on. You know, just put the switch on and get going. You have to believe that they can, given everything they've accomplished. But I don't know that there's a team looking as good after a qualifying round as the Carolina Hurricanes. So that series to me has seven written all over it, and I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's exciting. And it's so great to get you, you know, you're back. I feel like back in the rhythm with you. It's terrific. Now, listen, if you got some other pod listening time available, you should check out this week's Full 60 at The Athletic with Craig Custance. He's got Judd Moldaver on, rising young agent who's stable includes Austin Matthews, Roman Josi, and Carter Hart of the Philadelphia Flyers. So you should check that out. You should also check out Two Man Advantage minus the One Man every other morning. So Monday, Tuesday.
My lawyers are still getting in touch with their lawyers about that.
Yeah, no, I'm waiting to. That's why I'm still in the closet. Yeah, and I refuse to be served. So, if any morning you want to get on, you know, we do it first thing. You feel like it, just let me know. But you should check this out. We do a quick hit in the mornings, previewing the day's events, what happened overnight, that kind of stuff. And finally, Billy Guerin, GM of the Minnesota Wild, another GM who I don't think, who learned at the knee of Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh. I don't think Bill Guerin will be resting on any kind of laurels after the Wild's four-game loss to Vancouver. He joins Mike Russo this week on Straight from the Source at The Athletic. And you should always check out our comments section for each podcast episode at The Athletic app. And don't forget to rate and subscribe to Two Man Advantage on Apple. So thank you, Pierre. And we'll do it again next week, my friend.
Right on, right on.